be honest," Edward continued, "not everyone is worthy of experiencing the deep, intrinsic secrets that this mystic land is capable of providing with a first-hand experience. Many folks just aren't prepared mentally for the sheer strength and determination it takes to endure this place. Not everyone leaves here with the same grasp on reality that they had when they first arrived. There's a good chance that following your stay, you may wish to return someday, and there's nothing wrong with that. There just seems to be something about this land that has a tendency to attract people, almost like an addiction, but in a more psychological sense. All I'm saying is to please be careful. Realize that someday you may be able to return, but you shouldn't try to rush it or force it, and you can't stay here forever. So once you do finally depart, try to keep yourself from dwelling on the things you've seen here, although I know how difficult that can be at times. I've seen too many people make that foolish mistake and end up ruining their lives, convinced that this is some sort of promised land. And yes, it is a beautiful place to visit at the right time, and it can help you take a step back and view your life through a different lens. It's also constantly changing, and you must be aware that you can never predict what's going to change or happen next." I listened intently to what he had to say, although he had proceeded to lose me near the end of his oration. I just couldn't seem to make sense of all these repetitive warnings both men were giving me. Why couldn't they just be quiet for a few minutes and let me enjoy the land, I thought. Arthur must have picked up on these thoughts, because he spoke up, interrupting Edward. All right, he said. "Good speech, Edward, but we're getting ahead of ourselves." Edward nodded in agreement, acknowledging that he realized that. I was trying to process his series of words in my mind as best as I could, but couldn't deny that I still simply didn't understand yet. I stared at the man keeping pace next to me. His face suddenly held much more meaning than I was used to seeing in my usual day-to-day life. It was as if I was able to see every single projected detail on Edward's face, every hair and wrinkle and scar. I felt as though in a single instance I had captured 40 years of history that his eyes had witnessed and reflected back at me. Then, slowly, it actually began to contort and morph. I closed my eyes and looked away, glancing back again to thankfully see it had regained its original shape. Clearly, I was seeing things and my mind was continuing to play tricks on me, though it did force me to ponder how many people we took for granted in our lives, never really taking the time to understand what life meant to them, or what they had been through, or what they stood for. I looked at Arthur, who was walking along on the other side of Edward, and seemed to be lost in a world of his own thoughts, just enjoying the walk. As we traveled through the city, eventually I saw the buildings clear away, the streets all conjoining in the center of the town where countless individuals met at a bazaar. The road we were on took us over a short bridge, providing us with access into the marketplace. Directly at the center of the city, in the middle of all the various merchants, there lied a well. Then, set up surrounding the well in rings, was row upon row of vendors, each with their own harvested or handmade goods. It was a very traditional style city, each person contributing whatever they had to offer in order to make things work and function. The atmosphere and makeup of the city surrounding the marketplace consisted mostly of shops and service sectors, and very little housing. A church steeple split the sky in the distance, and in one direction a large building sat atop a hill, which I concluded to be the town hall. "Good morning," Edward cheerfully greeted his regular friends as he passed them on his standard morning routine. No matter how breathtaking and astounding I found this land to be, this was just another normal day in the life of Edward. I tried to bear that in mind, but at the same time, I felt as if I was able to provide him with a temporary sense of rejuvenated youth, at least during the time I was there with him. I thought that seeing me explore the land for the first time might bring back some memories for himself, memories from years, decades ago, memories from a past life. This world was pure magic to me. No other word comes as close to describing the essence of the land. Everything was so new and interesting. It filled my life with wonder and purpose, and while I could see by the face of this old, burnt-out soul walking along beside me that, for him, these feelings had died out long ago, I couldn't help but feel a perceived sort of connection with him. He had, at one time, been in the same position that I was currently in, regardless of how many years ago it might have been. There would have been a time when everything was new to him, and when he didn't understand any of the secrets that this strange, twisted realm held in store for him either. I felt confident that seeing me in this state now surely must have made him, at least briefly, think back to those days in his own life and recapture a moment of nostalgia that may have been lost to him. Of course, then again, maybe not. Slowly, the three of us made our way through the marketplace. Clearly, Edward was a regular customer for the majority of the vendors, who praised him when they saw him walking by. "Come on," Arthur said to me, gesturing ahead. We weaved our way through the endless wave of scurrying customers who bargained with many merchants. We finally stepped out of the commotion, up ahead to a fountain. Arthur and I sat on the ledge while Edward stayed behind for a brief moment in order to make a transaction. The temperature was perfect. The warm sun shone down on my face, and there was just enough of a breeze to make things comfortable. There wasn't a cloud in the sky. There was something truly unexplainable about this place. It had given me new life, and had opened up a whole new world of opportunities for the future. I would argue, in fact, that my eyes were open already, even just within the first 24 hours of being there. I could see there was more to life than the day-to-day grind which I had become so accustomed to. Much, much more than we could ever be certain of, for that matter. And now I felt like my life once again finally held some sort of meaning. If nothing else, I felt this land was something that every single person should experience at least once in their lifetime, and faces ran through my head. Faces of old friends and memories I hadn't even wanted to think about for years. All the wasted time and love that could have been recaptured if I had just made different decisions with my life. And while it was too late for any of that now, I could still make the most of the future, during whatever remaining years I still had left. And since we can never be truly certain of how much time we have left, that's what I fully intended to do. In the midst of silence between us and collective deep thought, I turned to Arthur. "What do you think?" asked Edward, making his way down the road from the bazaar to join us. I couldn't even find it in myself to answer the question. I was going to make some snide remark about how I thought the land was better than America, but was far too caught up in my own deep thoughts and pondering the true power that words could potentially have. I had regarded myself as a patriot, and certainly didn't want to insult my own country like that, even if it was just as a harmless joke. I thought back on the extent that lies had in my normal world, and the serious consequences that arose from them, and yet, even still, people never seemed to learn. I can't be too hypocritical or judgmental of others, though. I'm guilty of lying excessively myself at times. I swear, I'm the most terrific liar you ever saw in your life. It's awful. If I'm on my way to a store to buy a magazine, even, and somebody asks me where I'm going, I'm liable to say I'm going to the opera. It's terrible. Once I get started, I can go on for hours if I feel like it. No kidding, hours. Too many thoughts ran through my mind all at once, and I couldn't bring myself to really make sense of them, or prioritize or arrange one above another to help explain my feelings. So I just stared back at Edward in response to his question, and he laughed. Arthur and I stood from the edge of the fountain to join him, and then we continued on our way through the city. I was amazed and entranced by the classic architecture of several old buildings. The abstract designs would have given even Michelangelo or Frank Lloyd Wright a run for their money. I wondered where the resources to sustain such a civilized and developed community possibly came from, and for so many years. So many questions continually raced through my mind. Was this place really a creation of the gods? What was the point of all this? When and how would I ever get home? Where was I? That was the real question. I thought back to my childhood. To my days in grade school, which were supposed to prepare me for venturing out into the real world one day, but I certainly hadn't been taught how to prepare for anything like this. As we proceeded through the streets of the city, we neared the wall outlining the border of Osmany. Through the gates of this wall, we come to another valley surrounded by a forest, explained Edward, pointing ahead. It's basically just undeveloped woodlands, but there is a trail that runs through it, and it will lead us to the doctor's living quarters. Cool, I said to no one in particular. I had expected the walk through Osmany to take much longer than it actually had, and so I was feeling a renewed sort of strength for the rest of the day. In my mind, we were already ahead of schedule. It's a mission, though. It usually takes me about a week whenever I make the trip on foot. Fortunately for us, there's a man who owns a stable just outside of the city who rents horses. By horseback, you can normally make it in about a day, sometimes two. I noticed the houses gradually growing progressively more luxurious once again as we neared the outermost ring of the city. Finally, we neared the gate which led through the wall, and the houses cleared away. We made our way through the large, hollow archway, another line of guards once again protecting the entrance in a solid line. We excused ourselves from behind, and they parted to allow us through. Edward paused, turning back to them. Remember my face, he said smugly. We'll be back soon. Then turned and proceeded forward with us. The land outside the city wall was very much similar to when Arthur and I initially reached the island. The trail we followed ran down a brief hill before veering off at a right angle and ascending again along the hillside as the land dropped off onto a full green field below. Surrounding the field, trees grew incrementally thicker into a forest. Up ahead, I could see our path run down the other side of the inclined land, through the valley before finally trailing off into the distance. The land shifted in elevation significantly, but the peak of the island's tallest mountains still lied far from range, barely visible as they towered into the misty clouds above the earth in the distance. Just like Edward had promised, along the trail, just outside of the city walls, the land leveled off at the top of a small hill, and off to the side of the pathway was a small home, along with a stable and a few horses. This is where Oliver Chase lives, Edward said. He's lived here his whole life, lending horses to those in need. Always a really approachable fellow. We gradually made our way along the trail and over to the house. Drawing near, I could see a small wooden fence around his backyard, outlining the location of some extravagant gardens and fresh overturned soil running along the land for acres, providing areas for potential growth in addition to the rows upon rows of colorful flowers, small trees, and endless fruits and vegetables which were already abundant on his land. He had certainly been dedicated to his cause, there was no denying that. The three of us approached slowly and Edward gave a soft tap on the door. From where I was standing, I could only see a couple of windows present in the entire house. After a brief moment, an old, short man with a slight hunch answered. He had long, curly gray hair and a round, wrinkly face. But he didn't look bad or worn out or defeated by life. His eyes spoke of a lost youth and years of lost memories and lit up with a certain gleam of light when he saw us. Edward Cole, he exclaimed as he laid his eyes upon us. Hey, good to see you again, Edward greeted the old man before quickly introducing us. These are my friends, Arthur and Clyde. They're just touring the island for a short while. The man looked up and greeted us. Nice to meet you, he said, and both Arthur and I returned the custom greeting. He then went on to invite us in for tea, which Edward politely declined. Perhaps some other time. We were wondering, however, if we could each rent a horse. Of course, the old man replied without hesitation. They're yours. Edward thanked him and handed him a small flask of scotch from his pocket. Oliver then proceeded to lead us to the stable that two of his horses were confined in, while one more grazed outside. He assisted the three of us in equipping the horses with saddles and reins before we mounted them. Oliver, Edward spoke with that particular attitude of his in his voice. You never let me down yet. I owe you one, old friend. Always happy to help, the old man said humbly. I know you'll take good care of them. Edward nodded his head. You're goddamn right we will, he assured the man. It's hard for me to say for sure when we'll be back, but I guess we should be about a week, maybe. The man broke half a smile and gave a slight chuckle and ensured us that there was no rush. With that, Edward heeled his horse's ribs lightly, bringing the creature to a walking pace before turning to face Arthur and I. "Well, shall we continue?" he asked us, as he continued to circle on his horse, completing a full 360-degree turn before he kept making his way farther down the trail on horseback. Arthur and I exchanged looks and then followed Edward's lead. I took one last look back at the strange, simple town behind us. It amazed me in every sense. But now was time for a new leg of our journey. God only knew what lied in store for us next. We rode our horses along the top of the hill, where the land remained flat before it began its descent to the small valley below. As we increased the distance between ourselves and the town we had just passed through, known as Osmony, the forest began to grow thicker with trees, leaving the peaceful valley and the generous, simple farmer who lived atop the hill overlooking it behind us. We remained on the main trail at all times, but it was obvious that this wasn't a road that was traveled along very often. As our horses slowly took us over another hill, already well into the forest by this point, a huge, sleeping, monstrous creature came into view, resting at the entrance to its den. It looked similar to a grizzly bear, but was about 2.5 times larger, with long, razor-sharp fangs and claws. Edward stopped his horses the second his eyes came into contact with the beast, as did Arthur and I. Edward turned to look at us, as if to say, "Don't make a fucking noise," and we stared back as if to say, "We know." Cautiously and extremely slowly, as if to not make a noise, Edward withdrew a bow that was draped over his shoulder and hung from his back, which he had been carrying with him all day. He then proceeded to reach into the saddlebag once again and retrieve an arrow, which had been specially crafted to come to 3 separate points. 3 different individual tips at the end of the arrow, which allowed for 3 different points of impact close to one another. He readied the arrow in the bow, but didn't pull back on the string right away. He turned back to look at the two of us once again, and held his finger up to his mouth to tell us to be quiet. Then he tapped his horse's side with his heel, and the horse began moving forward at a snail's pace. Slowly, and extremely carefully, I did the same, then so did Arthur, each of us ensuring we made as little noise as possible, avoiding twigs that would snap on the ground underneath us. I was almost certain it still wouldn't be enough. There was no way this creature wouldn't pick up on our presence or be able to sense our collective life force close by. I just prayed it wasn't a mother with cubs. Sure enough, as I kept my eyes fixated on the beast as we warily passed by, not even 15 feet away from the slumbering monster, its ears began to perk up. I looked ahead at my comrade, Edward, who had seen it as well, and was already slowly drawing back the arrow in its bow as far as he possibly could, the elastic crying as it was stretched out, while he continued forward slowly on his horse. My eyes followed a projected path that the arrow would travel if suddenly released, coming to rest upon the hibernating creature's throat. I was convinced 3 separate deep wounds directly to the throat would be enough to lay this animal to rest. I just hoped I could have faith in my colleague to hit his mark. My gaze wandered over to Arthur, who had also retrieved the bow and arrow from the saddlebags on his own horse while I wasn't looking. He too had prepped his weapon, drew back the arrow, and now with a tight grip and shaking fingers, was ready to fire into the beast's left eye at any given instance. Its ears and eyelids continued to twitch. It definitely sensed us as an unknown and possibly dangerous presence. And I suppose by this point, that's exactly what we were to it. Not that we had gone into this area with the intention of hunting this rare and somehow elegant beast, but in a life or death scenario, we obviously had to think of our own welfare first. Needless to say, killing such a creature was certainly our last resort, and at the moment we just desperately wanted to put as much distance between it and the three of us as possible. Then the inevitable happened. We heard a loud, deep, low rumbling, which vibrated throughout the very land below our feet. The beast was growling at us and warning us it was prepared for a savage battle to the end. The noise struck fear deep down in my soul, and as Edward and Arthur turned their shoulders so that we could all face one another, the look in their eyes said the exact same thing. We were fucked. This was the noise of death, and as our horses continued forward at a dead slow pace, we could only brace ourselves for the inescapable fight which we could all feel was about to ensue. Ultimately, as predicted, the beast failed to let us down and proceeded to blink its eyelids open, straining them for a brief moment as its pupils adjusted to the midday lighting. His gaze immediately found the three of us, maybe 30 or 40 feet away, and its deep growling continued, growing even louder now as it rose to its feet. I had really been hoping that he wouldn't do this. Now he was consciously sending a message that he was going to come after us as he bore his full size. "Get ahead of us," Edward ordered blankly, not leaving an option. They brought their horses almost to a complete halt, while I softly picked up speed, very, very gradually, as to not alarm the beast who was standing on all fours, opening its mouth wide to growl at us now, baring its razor-sharp fangs. He stood about 5 feet tall and weighed at least 2,000 pounds of sheer muscle and raw power. The shape of his jaw looked as though it could crush your head in an instant with a single bite. Edward and Arthur continued to take aim, turning around on their horses who continued forward slowly. "Clyde?" I turned around to see my two friends staring death straight in the face as the monster now reared back onto its hind legs, letting out a terrible, deafening screech that echoed throughout the land, sending birds flying from the trees and the smaller animals scurrying for shelter. When I say go, Edward trailed off for a second. The creature let its own weight fall, crashing back down to the earth, shaking the land around it as he did so. The instant its front legs came into contact with the ground once again, Edward followed up on his previous statement. "Go!"